This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and you're listening to The Wake Up Call, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, news and views on the local scene. We hope that pretty soon we're going to have a guest, but in the meantime, I've got to get things organized here, so we'll get some music back for you.
To go Caribbean vacation, a goon or two will escort you, a White House invitation, dogs for pets, abusive sex, enhanced interrogation. It isn't torture if there isn't bodily cessation. La 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 la. Dick Cheney, he had a brew or three, and then went hunting quail. He shot instead a lawyer's head, why isn't he in jail? Obama, he and McCain agree to take Iraqi oil. Blackwater, they mercenary way to occupy their soil. La 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 la. McClellan says it was the Prez who was Valerie outing. Who cares as long as spending on the war is still amounting? Condi, she state secretary, says that we are winning. Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, she says it's just beginning. La 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 la. Both sides of Congress got their stock in military spending. It doesn't matter if our schools and bridges need amending. Our children need not music, art, and foreign language access. Better money spent on weapons they can use at recess. La 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 la. 1 billion is 300,000 people more for teaching. 400,000 children could have health care in their region. 6,000 housing units where poor people could be living. 100,000 scholarships for colleges be given. La 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 la. People, take responsibility for who you're choosing. If you vote for war, then war you get, and everyone is losing. La 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 la. La 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 la.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the Wake Up Call. I'm co-host Dick Paddock, and sitting across from me, as usual, is the co-host Lorraine Hoyt. We seem not to have scored our guest so far today. Sorry that maybe it's the weather, maybe it's some lack of communication, but in any case, we are not able to have our guest, so we will have some announcements.
Yeah, hi, Dick.
Hi.
The weather can be pretty, right now it's not too bad here in downtown Carrboro, but I know about an hour ago it was coming down fast and furious, making gullies in my backyard. And our guest is coming from, we think, from Durham or from some other place. So they may have gotten held up, and they might still be on their way. But in the meantime, we wanted to tell you about a few things. And one of them is just a brief report. Last night, there was a program on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade, so-called trade deal, at the Stone Center in Chapel Hill on campus, and which was very informative. And they're strongly encouraging all of us to, it was. Some people thought, I know a friend of a friend thought, oh, it's no point in doing anything, it's too late, because they had heard that they were signing the agreement in New Zealand. Our country, our country and the other 12 countries, or other 11 countries. But that's not true. That is being, the trade deal is being signed by trade representatives, but for it to be in effect in our country, it has to go through Congress. And it won't go through Congress until a bill is introduced into Congress, which could be introduced once it's signed in New Zealand at any time. But they, knowing how politics work, they may be waiting till after the election, would not surprise any of us. And then once the bill is introduced in Congress, then they have up to 90 days to either pass it or reject it. It's an up or down vote. It is not one that you can filibuster. It is not one that you can debate or discuss, which is one of the things.
I think they can debate it and discuss it. What they can't do is they can't amend it.
Oh, thank you, Dick. Thank you for that. Makes sense, doesn't it? Yes.
Because they wouldn't need to sit around and just watch the paper rot on the table.
Oh, gee, you're right.
6,000 pages.
Okay, they can't amend it. They can debate it and discuss it, and then they can vote it up or down, but they can't change it. That's the point. Thank you. I had that a little backwards there. So it ain't over till it's over is the point that I am trying to make. And this is not the time to give up. This is the time to work harder and to get in touch with your own particular congressman or any congressman that you know of in any state or in the rest of North Carolina, or if you have friends or family, not living in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Durham, get in touch and inform them about it. So
something is that may help guide you is the fact that our two senators, Tom Tillis and
Richard Burr,
both voted against the fast track. So they were not in favor of adopting it, which would tend to imply that they're not in favor of the whole process.
Although they could have had pressure, or they could, right. Corporations may have gotten to them in the meantime. So we can't count on that. But that's interesting that they voted. And so did our own David Price, who is our particular congressman, did not vote for fast track. But he's being very cagey and giving it much thought. He has not come out whether he will vote for it or against it when it's up for a vote.
And we've already contacted
G.K.
Butterfield,
mm-hmm.
And he is playing his cards really close to his
desk. Yes.
He may not even have a hand yet. Same... I think with Mark Walker, who's in Congress over in Alamance County area, I believe. and of course, there's a couple of others that are known, but which escaped me, except for Renee Elmers is in the area, but not in our immediate broadcast area. So,
yeah.
We also should point out that we had a press conference that we called the people who put together the TPP working group teach-in last night, called a press conference for this morning, and there were, I would guess, upwards of 40 people who showed up for the press conference, and we had had people who spoke. One member who's a local organizer for the AFL-CIO, somebody from the Communications Workers of America, Mel Montford, who's executive director of the A. Philip Randolph Association, and a couple of others spoke at the press conference, and it was held in the building where Butterfield has his office. And we sent somebody up to ask if they would come down, listen to what we had to say, make comments, make a statement. And the answer was no, 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 and no. And so we did not have any way to interact with them. But we did make the effort, and there was a good turnout. And let's see. Oh, and John Wadilla Hunt also spoke, who's Black Workers for Justice.
Excellent.
And also a Postal Workers Union member.
So we won't go into tonight We don't have our papers with us because we're not planning on talking about that tonight, or our fact sheets with us, except to say that we are totally opposed to it. It is, it's, if you didn't like NAFTA, you will hate the TPP. We've already lost, and I wish I had the fact sheet, how many thousands of jobs we've lost in North Carolina from our textile manufacturing base, from our furniture manufacturing, to NAFTA. And these jobs have not come back. There are communities that are still pretty much devastated from that, trying to keep going. So we've had it. We've had two or three programs about it. We'll have programs again. But if you want to stop it, what it's recommending, Monday is going to be National Call-In Day. And they're asking people, and the main points that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it will put Americans out of work, it will destroy environmental protections, and it will increase prescription drug prices. That's some of the main things in a nutshell, but there's much more to it, particularly the secrecy, that many corporations had participation in drafting these arcane rules. Is how many thousands of, how many pages?
6,000 pages.
6,000 pages, and we all know that the devil is in the details when you get to legal things. And so the American people are the ones who know the least and are being kept in the dark. And they are not rushing, except for people like us and progressives who are trying to get the information out. The media is doing a, and, you know, it's not a very exciting, you talk about a TPP, you ask even very educated people on the street, and they say, I should know that, but what is that again? You know, people,
right.
You know, people are busy with their lives. There's so many things that are of concern. There's elections coming up. That's taking a lot of the air out of the room. And so we, in our radio show here and other people, are trying to get the word out. But if you've already gotten the word, on Monday, you can call Congress. And I'm going to give you that number, and we'll give it. We'll talk a little bit more, and we'll give it again. Okay, the number is 1-855-856-7545. Now, if you don't have your pen, go find it, or a pencil. I'm going to give it again, and then I'm going to give it again in a little while.
There's a particular reason for that, and that is that that number logs the calls because it asks you for your zip code, and that will determine which Congress member and senator is yours, and then you will be connected and your call will be tallied, and that way you can't have, we can't have 20,000 people have called a representative who's for it and have him say, we only got 13 calls or something.
Yeah. So this is a way for them to keep track. So you're going to be calling Congress, that they will connect you to, after you, they know your zip code, to your particular congressperson. And when you get on, you don't need to know all the facts. Just tell them to oppose the TPP. That's all you got to tell them. If you want to tell them more, fine, go ahead. But they are, it'll go to probably one of their assistants or aides, and they are obligated by law to pass on what the phone calls are about to the congressman. So this, it will count, and you don't need to go into a long discussion. Just say, please oppose the TPP, and then you'll have done your citizen's duty. If you want to do more, that's fine, but please do that. The number, if you have your pen or pencil ready, 1-855-856-7545. 7545. And we'll give it again in just a little bit. So this was last night, the program at the Stone Center, and then this morning the press conference. But the thing that our guest tonight was going to talk about, and maybe we could still she might still be able to make it, and if not, we'll try to maybe switch our schedule for next week. We can see about that, or at least we'll talk about it again. And that is, this will be the 10th anniversary of HK on J. And if you're new to this area and or new to our show, or are saying, what the heck is HK on J? Okay, we're going to tell you. H stands for historic, K stands for thousands, and J stands for Jones Street, which is where the legislature is. So HK on J stands for historic thousands on Jones Street.
And it's shorthand for the People's Assembly of North Carolina, and also the Mass Moral March on Raleigh. So this is coming up on, as always has been, the second Saturday in February.
February 13th this year.
Yeah, it always seems to be cold. Sometimes it's colder than cold.
Than other times.
But
some very often bright and sunny.
Yes, and you believe it or not, we had semi-official counts from news media of the crowd that came 2 years ago, and there were 80,000 people there, which is the largest congregation of any protest probably anywhere in North Carolina, and nobody heard about it because you know what happened. The mass media didn't want you to know about it. And it didn't seem to stir up anybody inside either. But in any case, this is a rally, and it's a central focus for our annual get-together, but it's not the only thing we do.
Yeah.
We work very hard on voting rights, labor rights, education equality, health care for all, environmental justice, equal protection under the law, criminal justice reform, and ending racialized police brutality.
And for years it's had a 14-point agenda, and the agenda evolves as these issues evolve, especially in the last few years on health care. It's not just health care, but it's on expanding Medicaid, which has been a big issue for the last 3 or 4 years in this state, where 300,000 to 500,000 people are without health care that could have it if we expanded Medicaid. And so it's a wonderful, just like we're the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're the sponsors of this program. And one of our, we're a multi-issue organization, and we always believe in connecting the dots. In fact, a lot of times we would say the wake-up call where we connect the dots. And that is what the HK on J, it connects the dots. All these issues are interrelated. And so we're hoping to, if somebody has not heard about it, that you will consider going. There's going to be buses going from United Church of Chapel Hill. And Dick, do you have they would just look up what the state NAACP to?
Right, yes.
The website?
The website is NAACPNC.org. And from there, you can navigate to the HK on J website arrange to get yourself on a bus if that's what you prefer. Or
you can drive there.
You can drive, and I'm sure there'll be maps there telling you this is where you can park,
mm-hmm.
Or where you're likely to get parking.
Mm-hmm.
The starting point is near Shaw University. It's on the corner of Wilmington and South Street, near Shaw University is the way they put it on the flyer. And that gathering is the pre-rally there at 9 a.m., And then at 10 a.m., the march begins, and we march up Fayetteville Street to an area that's just south of the state capitol. And that's where everybody gathers in order to hear the charge to the people.
And they have some terrific speakers. And when there is a huge crowd like there has been the last couple of years, we're hoping there will be again. They have these huge TVs along the street so that you can see and hear everything. They did it beautifully because there were so many people you couldn't get up near the, the front, most of us, so that, but you know, you got to hear everything that was going on. It's very exciting. It's so heartening where you may be stomping up and down your living room like many of us, cussing and upset with what's happening in this crazy world. And this is just a wonderful way to know you're not alone, that there are many people who share your passion for social justice, who share your concerns, and that in unity there is strength. And that helps you know what it really helps you to feel empowered and to know that change can occur, and we all got to keep our unity going and get ourselves out there, not just do the stomping up and down of the living room. That's not going to change things unless you get out of that living room and get together in organizations like ours, the Women's International League, the NAACP. There's so many wonderful Witness for Pieces, Peace Now. A lot of your churches have peace groups. You know, there's all kinds of wonderful organizations where you can not feel alone, where you can be working with other people to organize. Because that, what is that old labor expression or union expression? Don't get depressed, organize.
Right, don't mourn, organize.
Yeah.
Is the short version, yeah.
Yeah.
And what we like to say is, forward together.
Not one step back. Forward together now. Not one step back. That is Reverend Barber, the head of the state NAACP from the Moral Mondays, has really got that slogan in all our minds and hearts. And it's a great slogan. It's a great mantra. So that is HKNJ coming up a week from Saturday. Find out more about it. And is there any other...
Tim Tyson.
Yeah, tonight, if you are listening still to us, tonight at the United Church of Chapel Hill, they've been having, a 4-week series on race. And if you get there, I think by 5:30, 5:45, you can get a light supper. And then at 6:30 tonight will be Tim Tyson, our favorite historian, and talking. He's a historian, particularly of the civil rights movement. And so it'll be something connected with race and civil rights. And I imagine it'll be linked to the upcoming HKNJ.
Yeah, that certainly will figure in some way.
That I'm sure it will. So it's not too late. And if you're sitting there and just thinking, oh, this rain, I'm just a little bored or whatever, you know, get your raincoat, get your umbrella, and go singing in the rain and dance on over to the United Church of Chapel Hill. And you'll hear wonderful. He's such a good speaker, Tim Tyson. And you'll be glad you did, folks. So I can't think of anything else.
That's pretty much it, I think.
That's pretty much it. Why don't we play another song, and then we'll come back. And before we play that, I'm going to give that phone number again. And the phone number is, and this again, will get you linked to your own particular congressperson, but by calling this number instead of directly to your congressperson, it will have all these calls be tallied. They're going to be all over the nation. This is going to be national call-in day about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so you don't have to know a whole lot. Just tell your congressman that you want them to vote to oppose the TPP. And the number is 1-855-856-7545, 7545. So call that number on Monday, and you'll be linked to your congressman. They'll ask you your zip code, and then they'll link you to your very own congressperson, and you can tell that person to please oppose the TPP. And you can say right. more if you want to, but that's all you have to say, and that will get counted.
Right. So we're going to play you out with another Tom Nielsen song, and then we'll switch over to the tail end of a previous show.
Of a previous show.
So thank you all for tuning in.
Yeah.
And we really do appreciate it.
We do. Oh, so next week, that's right, we're maybe going to have, I'm not sure, we might still have Mary Grace and Carol Edmonds about health care for all. But since HKNJ is coming up, we may, so it's going to be good. We're going to have somebody wonderful on as per usual, and we're not quite sure.
Yeah.
But tune in to find out for sure, but it's going to be good.
Right. So thank you and have a good evening. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. The Wake Up Call, where we, as we said, connect the dots.
Connect the dots, and that's, I'm Lorraine Hoyt, and this is...
Co-host Dick Paddock.
Dick Paddock.
And we will start things up now with a little music, and we wish you a good evening.
You a good evening, and stay dry. Go find that umbrella. If it's in the hall closet, go find your umbrella. You'll need it. And come on over to the United Church of Chapel Hill. As long as you're there by 6:30, that's when Tim Tyson will be starting his talk. And there'll be plenty of parking, I'm sure.
Yep. And this is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your 100-watt wonderful station.
Good. A community station that we love.
They want to cut down our trees, poison our air, waste our water away, burn a ton every minute, 60 tons an hour, 1,400 tons a day. Carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, NO and SO2. Gonna find their way to your inside when you breathe that toxic stew. Siltation and soil erosion, taking cover from the land. And when all our trees are spent, it's not 0.5%. Gotta stop it if we can. There are shysters who always sell snake oil. Does payola slip into a hand? 'Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? 'Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? 1,000,000 gallons a day of sewage from our town to flush that boiler out, till it gets so thick they have to dump it in the river. Say goodbye to the perch, bass, and trout. This incinerator's inefficient, burns at 23% an obscene waste of energy. The chromosomal damage and endocrine destruction gives bioabnormalities. There are are shysters who always sell snake oil. Does payola slip into a hand? 'Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? 'Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease. And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease. And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease.
This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
The idea is the Jewish National Fund is considered a charity. Okay, the Jewish National Fund is an organization that specifically enforces the idea of property that is Palestinian to be given exclusively to Jews. So we've got a problem with that organization. Coca-Cola's corporate offices in Atlanta donate regularly to the Jewish National Fund. So does Estee Lauder's CEO. Estee Lauder's CEO not only is the president of the Jewish National Fund, not only is he personally the largest investor in Jewish-only homes in occupied territories, he also runs summer camps to promote Zionism among European Jewish children, and he's gone ahead and bought some really good companies. So emotionally, you should be opposed to this fellow, as well as they continue to test on animals on their cosmetics. So there's so many reasons. Estee Lauder has purchased Clinique and Origin and Bobbi Brown and MAC. I think that's it. There might be another one. So a lot of cosmetic companies, okay? McDonald's gives to the United Jewish Federation. Again, we shouldn't be eating at McDonald's. Nestle is one of those companies that I run out of reasons. I mean, what is it going to be? Their support of baby milk formula that caused an increase in infant mortality in Northern Africa? Or is it again going to be their terrible environmental record, their anti-union behavior, their promotion of really unhealthy foods? Or is it going to be that they donate food and money and training specifically to Israeli organizations? Yeah. And recently, they actually set up a cereal company in the occupied territories specifically. So again, there's so many reasons. And I've yet to pick up on a company that I don't like. Philip Morris, on and on. Companies that invest in Israeli firms, again, we've got the same listing. In addition to Starbucks. Starbucks bought an Israeli company that sells coffee. They bought a coffee company called Shalom Coffee. And then, incidentally, a few years ago, they sold it. Now, they say that they sold it because economically it wasn't profitable. So I'm not sure if we can claim credit for that. But I say, you know, why not? I'll claim credit for them selling that. Though, I'm still encouraging people to boycott Starbucks. So regardless what they do in Israel-Palestine, please don't drink coffee at Starbucks, okay? Companies that open research centers, that open research centers in Israel. And the aspect of this is, well, what's the problem with opening a research center? Again, the idea is that it promotes specific technology-based, military-based, and it encourages the economy. Coca-Cola, Estee Lauder, Johnson & Johnson, Nestle, I can give you a much longer list, but these are just some samples. So you can choose, well, which one do we want to highlight? But these are ways that we identify the companies. It's not simply a company that has a store in the occupied Palestinian territory. Burger King, for example, has one. Again, who wants to eat a Burger King? Supporters of the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. These are recent, and I'm saying that these are the ones just this year. Just this year, these organizations said, we support boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Canadian Union of Public Employees, Ontario's University Workers Coordinating Committee, that specific committee. I'm not going to say this in French, but a union in Quebec, in the College Federation there, the Scottish Trade Union Congress, which their statement was huge, very powerful, an Australian Dog Workers Union, very recently, and I mean just 2 days ago, the Fire Brigades Union, which is a British firefighter union, also called for the complete boycott of Israel, academics from England, Scotland, France, Lebanon, and for the first time, the United States. There is a U.S. campaign for academic and cultural boycott of Israel. That's their website. Very recent. So new that the Haaretz said, wait a second. We're used to European academics being opposed to us, but my God, when U.S. academics make this kind of statement, now we have to get worried. So U.S. academics, and this was all in response to Gaza, but it doesn't stop there. Very recently, academics in Israel published a statement in The Guardian saying, boycott us. Academics in Israel, they said, we as Israeli citizens raise our voices to call on EU leaders, they kind of gave up on U.S. leaders, I guess, use sanctions against Israel's brutal policies, join the active protest of Bolivia and Venezuela, both of whom cut off relations with Israel during that time. We appeal to the citizens of Europe, please attend to the Palestinian human rights organization's call, supported by more than 540 Israeli citizens. This is a hugely important statement, saying that a community saying, boycott us, isolate us, please. They actually said, this is the only road left, help us all, please. To me, this was one of the most moving statements that I read. This was issued earlier this year, again, in response to the Gaza massacre. But when we have people themselves, just like people in South Africa, one of the comments I heard when I was reviewing the history of apartheid South Africa was people were saying, no, apartheid, the boycott divestment movement against South Africa really hurt the South African population that we wanted to have solidarity with. And the response was, well, they wanted it. They said, boycott us. Not only that, you know, it didn't actually hurt them because they were being hurt by other much more punitive aspects, but here, Israeli citizens themselves are saying this. This isn't a majority, but it's possibly a growing sentiment. Possibly. Now, we can look at this and say, how about it's all talk? And it doesn't mean anything until we see really vast economic shifts. What has actually happened really economically? And again, this is all recent. This is all this year. Massachusetts, Hampshire College, said a historic precedent by announcing its divestment from six companies profiting from the Israeli occupation. They were also the first college to divest from apartheid South Africa. So it means a lot from that aspect. In Wales, the Cardiff University acceded to demands by students and decided to divest from companies supporting the occupation. And this has a lot of historic appeal, in South Africa, dock workers refused to offload a ship full of products from Israel. Given that the first victory the BDS movement in apartheid South Africa got was support from dock workers, this just has a lot of historical appeal. That we saw this happening in South Africa, they refused to, you know, to offload a ship. And again, to me, what really moves me most about this, more than what happened in Wales and Massachusetts, was its workers getting together with workers in other communities saying, we are not going to support your oppression. We're not going to do it. Okay? Now, possibly, if the workers of the world have, I don't mean to quite sound so Marxist, but if union leaders were more powerful during the BDS movement against apartheid South Africa, possibly we wouldn't have economic apartheid in South Africa, which is what we have now. Possibly we could have destroyed all the aspects of apartheid, not just political. So I would emphasize that these have to be linked, and we need to be working with unions when that's possible. But it doesn't stop there. This is huge. This is really, really huge. The French company Veolia withdrew from operating the rail project to connect the city center of Jerusalem with settlements in the West Bank. And this was completely because of the BDS movement. This was a success from Swiss organizations. And observers said, you know, the Swiss did it with such attention to detail and such meticulous sustainability that they managed to get an organization to lose significant amounts of money in Israel rather than lose more significant amounts of money in Europe, which was how they did it. Either you stop doing this there, or we're going to divest from you. Either you stop doing this there, or we're going to break off contracts with you in Switzerland and in other parts of Europe. And it worked. It was very successful. And again, these are all examples from this year. More. Motorola. Motorola has a specific department in Israel that works on bomb fuses. And these bomb fuses were very important in the latest Gaza carnage. So there became a massive movement, primarily in New York City, combined with international movements, but primarily in New York City, geared to get Motorola to stop doing that kind of production, and recently it worked. They decided we're no longer going to be providing the Israeli government with these products. So we see these real success stories, not small stories, not this aspect that we got a resolution passed, which is no small thing, but this is on-the-ground difference. And it's more. This is a statement published by an economist in March of this year, where he did a review of economic papers in Israel. And, you know, businessmen ultimately care about the bottom line. And they found that in 1 month, four articles in economic magazines in Israel were saying, look, there's been an increasing European boycott of our product. We don't like it. We're finding more people are asking us to state what our position is with regards to Gaza before they do business with us. We don't like it. We don't want our government to be doing this policy because it's harming us economically, which is exactly what we want them to say. And to find four articles in 1 month in magazines in Israel is really powerful. The catch that he was saying was the momentum has to be maintained and strengthened. If the momentum is maintained and strengthened, we are going to see a transition in policy. Because there's already been rumblings within the economic circles in Israel saying we're being impacted by this, we don't like this. So we see there's a real possibility for victory here. It's not simply small. And 2 days ago, and this really meant a lot, this is what we talk about, the cultural boycott. Leonard Cohen, I don't know how many of you know Leonard Cohen, Canadian singer, really, really cool singer. He decided recently that he wanted to sing in Ramallah and I believe in Tel Aviv. A lot of protests were geared against him, saying, no, we don't want you singing there. He decided to cancel Ramallah particularly because every single Palestinian organization said, no, we're not going to host you if you're also going to sing there. No, we don't want this. His idea was, we're going to take all the funds from the concert and give it to Israeli and Palestinian organizations. Now, the Palestinian organizations that were named in that fund weren't even contacted. And all the Palestinian organizations that could potentially be contacted said, we don't want money if it's also going to go to the Israeli organizations. No, we don't want that operation. His fund was organized by Amnesty International, which was all the more outrageous. So there became a lot of pressure organized by the BDS campaign on Amnesty International to withdraw its support. 2 days ago, Amnesty International said, we're not going to take care of distribution of the funds because all the funds would be distributed to Israeli organizations. We're not going to do that. We're not going to be involved in this. So this becomes a success in the terms of the cultural boycott. Okay. Now, to get Madonna to change her mind would be more difficult. In London, and this is the fun thing about this. I mean, Emma Goldman said this, that she wanted to dance at the revolution. You know, and the aspect is that if we want things to be sustainable, my God, they have to be fun. Because nobody really wants to do depressing work all the time. It just, our emotions won't allow us. And we find there's some really creative actions that are being done. In London, organizers go into Tesco supermarkets, and they pick up, you know, products that are made in Israel. And they trap them in a cart and imprison them. They're not going to release these products until there's a change in Israeli policy. Basically, they put them in a cart and go around and around in the supermarket distributing material, saying why they don't want people to purchase this material and why they're causing this, you know, fun disturbance. There's all these stories of people doing this. I remember an organization in California, Lesbians for Peace and Justice in Israel-Palestine. Love these names. They decided to go into Starbucks and declare that by their religion, God has spoken to them that Starbucks is their promised land and they're not leaving. And these are the really fun ways of doing this. So this is what's been happening in London, but it doesn't stop there because arguably you can say that the people who are having the most fun are here in the States. And Ahmad Barghouti writes that there's a lot of diversity to the global BDS movement. He's one of the co-founders of the BDS movement in Palestine. He says, you know, there's a French style, and the French style is they go into chic boutiques in the Champs-Élysées, the mega supermarkets, and they encourage customers to boycott Israeli products. The British occupy university buildings, demanding divestment. The Scots mark Israeli bottled water as containing contamination with apartheid, so don't drink Israeli bottled water because it's contaminated. The Welsh actually ketchup, Israeli products to drive across a very graphical message. So they throw ketchup on Israeli products. The South Africans don't offload an Israeli ship, thus setting this historical precedent. The Turks, when they recently had to play with an Israeli sports team, actually showered them with shoes, thus following the Iraqi precedent. The Swedes, of course, through meticulous efforts, got to succeed in Viola. And, he says, the Americans boycott Ahava in pink bikinis. This is code pink. And the way that they're protesting Ahava, which, how many people here have heard of Ahava? Okay, it's a cosmetic company that says we're using Dead Sea products from Israel, but it's happened to be from a settlement in the occupied West Bank. Okay, so it's not Israel. It's actually occupied territory legally. And they distribute this. And so Code Pink says, no, we're not. And they go in there fully dressed and then take off their clothes. They're in these pink bikinis. They put mud all over themselves and they say, it's stolen beauty. Don't buy a Ahava. It's a product made in occupied Palestine. And the thing is, there's been a victory already. If we notice this woman right here, Kirsten Davis, you know, the conservative woman on Sex and the City, she was taken as the face of Ahava after she was chosen as one of the ambassadors of Oxfam. So there became a lot of protest going, wait a second, Oxfam says this is occupied territory. So how could Oxfam be claiming that you are an ambassador of Oxfam and you claim to represent an organization that isn't from this occupied territory? Recently, and we highlighted this as saying, Oxfam dumps, you know, Sex and the City, I forgot what her name is on Sex and the City. And so she got dumped again by Oxfam. The idea that Oxfam just last week, very recently, said, no, we're firing her as an ambassador. They said, you know, it's because we don't have any work for her. Of course, no organization, when they do this, say it's because of BDS. But it's because of BDS, and particularly because of Code Pink. Now, Ahava, if you go to Ulta, which is that mega cosmetic store, there's one in Raleigh, I'm sure there's one here, they have Ahava products. So it becomes a really easy thing to do. And I would say, personally, bikinis are optional, and you know, men, speedos, whatever, it's a really fun thing. Stolen Beauty, which is the website, you can just go to Stolen Beauty, the Code Pink website on this topic, they've boiled it down. They've given the literature, they've given the exact guidelines, how could you go about doing this if you want to do an event on Ahava. And again, this is something that has already worked. The catch is, as Ali Abu Nama wrote in 2009, the catch is we are at a critical stage. We are really at a critical stage, and I'm not saying this simply because, you know, it's good to say this in a talk, we're at a critical stage. We really are. We find two things are happening. The Israeli government is going for more and more extreme measures, and they're going for more and more extreme measures quite publicly. So in one way, they're no longer trying to appear egalitarian. And so many things that they're doing just these past 2 years, it's much more horrific and much stronger and less covered. And I don't think it's incidental that this is happening at the same time that their claim that we attack Palestinians or Lebanese, for that matter, for self-defense is really losing ground. It's really hard to say that the attack against Gaza really wasn't self-defense. I mean, hard to venture. Just as it's hard to accept that the attack against Lebanon really wasn't self-defense, militarily, politically, however way. So there's become this shift. More and more people are rejecting that, and more people are questioning, wait a second, this whole legitimacy of a state only for one group of people based on the domination of that group of people on another is something we have problems with. So we have this fork that's happening, and it all depends who pushes more. If there's more push from the international community, the Israeli government will be moved. I have no question. If there's less of a push from the international community, the Israeli government will continue the move another way. So that's the fork that I think is happening. And this is a fork that's being supported by a lot of analysts. And Ali states it very clearly by saying we must do all we can to push it over. To push it over. What limited South African apartheid from being as horrific in their attacks against the indigenous community wasn't that they had a greater sense of conscience. I don't believe politicians, with the exception of, you know, the politicians I love, actually have that sense of conscience. So in that sense, what worked was this global anti-apartheid movement. And just as it worked in South Africa, it very, very well can work here. I've got no doubt. If we follow the lessons and we learn from what happens in the past, this is typically what a lot of people ask for. So I'm just going to stop on this line and say these are some resources. There's so many more resources, including, of course, this is just a good book as a starter, Ben White. Its book, Israeli Apartheid, A Beginner's Guide, is really good as a beginner's guide. Start here, progress then to Ilan Pappé, progress to Jonathan Cook's excellent book, Disappearing Palestine. There's so many resources. But the bottom line, and I tell this to my students, the aspect of learning is when we take information and we get it to change our lives. So if we read this material and we say, oh, that's interesting, and it stops there, it's as if we haven't read it. But if we take this material, we take these lessons, we take a little bit of energy that we have, and we say, okay, what are we going to do about it? What is something that's within my energetic capability? What's something that the community that I work within is ready to do? Not every community is ready to have a full-out cultural boycott or a full-out academic boycott. Fine. But I believe every community is ready to boycott a hub. Every community is ready to divest from Caterpillar. Every community is ready to do something fun in a supermarket. Really. Start there and progress however far you want to go, because every little bit actually makes a difference. The key is that our boycott should not be private. It really, really should be public, and it should be declared, and it should be filled with a sense that, in contrast to a lot of movements that I organized in, I really think this is something we can win. Firmly believe so. So on that, I'm going to open the floor for your questions and comments.
You have just heard an address by Rania Masri, a Palestinian and a resident of Raleigh, to Balance and Accuracy in Journalism. The address was entitled From Ferguson to Palestine, and we hope you enjoyed it. This has been the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. See you again next week.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org. To make a financial contribution or help support our many featured news and information programs, click the PayPal donate button at the top of our main page. Thanks for listening to your community radio station.